Hey listeners, secret listeners, new listeners. Tonight's topic is a heavy topic. Our original disclaimer is still in place. However, we must advise you that this is a conversation that must not be taken lightly. And we do advise you once again, this is a conversation that you do need to listen to at your own risk. If you are someone that is struggling with addiction, the National Hotline for Drug Addiction and Drug Abuse is 1-888-633-3239. You can also reach out to the Sunrise Fund, which will be featured in the show notes as well as posted and tagged in our Facebook. This conversation is a very important conversation, and we hope that you get something from it. If not, please share it with someone that might need help. Thank you.
A quick convo about Jill. What can I say? I first met Jill way back in the day of elementary school. Even though her and I were never at the same school, we would always seem to find each other. I was a Plum Cove Pirate, and of course she was a rival to me, a Magnolia Lion, then a Seahawk, and then she became a Raider. She was one of those intimidating players, even to me. Ha ha. We both knew what we could do, and it scared us. After those elementary years, we would then see each other at basketball, through O'Malley, and then to high school. We became a lot closer and soon became great friends. We were freshmen who made it on the varsity softball team. We both were a little nervous at first, but later we knew we would be just fine and perfect there. A couple years would go by, and come to find out, we were both softball captains. This finally made us the closest we were ever be. That senior year went by so quickly. We both knew we were going separate ways. A couple years later, we ended back up on the same softball team in the women's league, the Soupies. Won a bunch of championships together. After that, it was just co-ed tournaments throughout the years, being on the same team, different teams. But I will always remember Jill as being one of the best softball players I've ever seen, and I was so lucky enough to play right alongside of her.
Good morning, Gloucester. This is Alicia Unleashed, and we are episode 90. So it was only 10 more till we reach 100, which I said we were going to reach 100 in 2018, and we're already in March.
And I've got the next 7 lined up, so we're solid.
All right. Well, I mean, it's just the fact of actually, you know, doing it. Yeah, that's great we have them lined up, but I know the summer is the busiest because now we have Fiesta coming up and we have to do all that. So, anyway, today we're here at B-Side.
What up?
We're here with Christian.
Hello.
And Jackie.
Hello.
Hello. Guys, as you noticed, we didn't have a hot plate tonight, and that's because we have such an awesome lineup and probably a lot to talk about. So we wanted to just go right into it, skip our hot plate. And so I would say, when did we discover this, Bridget? Like, has it been a month? Well, when did you guys go live on social media with this?
I think it was...
We didn't even say what they were.
Not yet. Right.
I think it was October or November.
I have no clue.
No, it was right around Thanksgiving, remember? Because we were going to...
Oh, yeah.
We launched the website, like, the week before Thanksgiving.
And we were thinking about put it on Facebook like Thanksgiving Eve because that was like a popular time.
Yes.
So we found, I think in January? I think sometime in January.
Mm-hmm. I started
noticing more and more people. Yeah, right, exactly.
Like, hey, can I approach you about this? Mm-hmm. And I asked Alicia if it would be okay because with our podcast, being out of Good Morning Gloucester, you know, we are allowed to do whatever we want. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, this would be one of our more hard-hitting topics.
Right.
And it's always been something that I personally think needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And since you are of, you know, our age is very important. So I spoke with Alicia and then I reached out to Rachel, who is my hetero life mate, and was like, hey, could you just maybe message Jackie and just let her know she might get this
random message.
I have randomly messaged some people, and they still haven't responded back to me, but I've seen them several times. I've been able to sit, like, like that's been able to touch them.
Especially when you can see the little circle and know the person looks.
Yeah. And the fact is that I see you almost on a weekly basis, sometimes twice a week. I'm like, and he has no idea. And I'm right here. And then the other day, I was like, okay, see you on Wednesday. And you were like, yep.
We can literally like wave to each other from our windows.
I've talked about getting a zip line just to
get food, right, just to get socks across.
Just whip it.
Exactly.
Just to get across. All you need to do is just go across
just
the yard.
Just get a conveyor belt. That's all I need.
So in case you guys are wondering, we're talking about the Sunrise Fund. So whoever wants to take it away about what is the Sunrise Fund?
You're the president.
All right. Well, the Sunrise Fund is a 501c nonprofit that we made, and it's basically like a recovery scholarship. So it's for anyone who is motivated and willing to go into a treatment program that needs help financially. So they'll probably be coming from a detox, so they'll already be in the process. It's not going to be just like anyone that just wants to do it. You know, they'll right. be detoxed and out and ready to go. And willing is the big key part. You
right.
know? And, you know, their family members or them will reach out to us and we'll help them, you know, for a month or two or a couple months. Or we're still trying to figure out, you know, the logistics of it. But however long it takes. And we want to really, you know, instead of just doing one little spurt of money for one person, you know, focus on that person and for a while, you know,
right.
a couple months and months, maybe even help them with a first month's rent or first, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So it's going to be a fund that will basically help someone that's very focused in their recovery and, you know, like a financial recovery scholarship.
And this, you said this went live in November. You said this went live in November. Is that when you got the clearance for the 501c or process take?
We started without
yeah.
being a 501c.
Okay.
We just started as straight as like a charitable donation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we were like, well, we're actually going to need some real funds to make this work. Private treatment isn't cheap.
Right.
And we were thinking about it. If we're going to do this right, it's like we need to really raise money. And we felt to really raise money, you know, we needed that tax ID number.
Right.
And that was the next step was, mm-hmm. you know, filling out the forms. And we got Justine Laurie on the board, who's
right.
been like, she's so good. Like,
yeah.
tax anything.
Right.
It's crazy. Like,
yeah.
she was just on it. And her husband Mike is on the board also. And,
mm-hmm.
and they basically just...
It was like within a month.
Yeah.
She was like, all right, the application is in with the IRS. And
wow.
So we got approved. It took a while. I mean, government shut down and everything.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's right.
that didn't
right.
help us.
Yeah.
But I think it was like February that we got approved, the approval, middle of February or something. And I did that newsletter. I don't know if that might have been the one
that
you
might
saw
have been
that went kind of viral.
It,
yeah.
yeah,
it was like a newsletter. And I said, like, the board and, you know, our first fundraiser that we got approval for, the tournament, the golf tournament. So.
Okay. And how did this start? Like, where did this come from?
So Christian and I have had a long history of, you know, helping. My sister was in and out of a lot of programs, and even I remember when Christian was going into programs too, and I remember going to his younger sister Emily is my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So years and years ago, I mean, you've been sober for what, 7 years?
Mm-hmm.
So it must have been 8 or 9 years ago. I remember bringing him, you know, to treatment programs and
twice brought me to detox.
Yeah,
we stopped. I got high in that CVS bathroom, then I started throwing up
yeah.
all over the place on
yeah.
the way to detox.
Yep. I remember.
Remember that?
Yep.
And I was like, I ate some bad food in that CVS.
Yeah, I know.
And then you came up and visited me when I was in the Plymouth House.
Yep.
With Emily and my mother.
Mm-hmm. And the Plymouth House may be one of the places that we send people to. It's like a really nice treatment center in Plymouth, New Hampshire. But again, it's like, I don't know, a month is like 7,000 or something.
Wow.
Yeah. But we're hoping, you know, that when we talk to these places and we tell them what they're doing, that's going to be the next step. Like after the golf tournament, I'm going to sit down with a bunch of connections that I've met
yeah.
throughout this trip and, you know, and talk to different people I have that run centers. And hopefully, you know, they'll be willing to work with us too, you know, because they also have scholarships available and, you know, they might be able to cut cost, knowing that the people that we will be sending are going to be on like a scholarship base. And I think they will.
And that's private treatment. Like that's not insurance or anything like that. They don't take that's just private.
Right.
You know, the problem with insurance is like, it's mandated that there's doctors involved, psychiatrists involved.
Yeah.
There are all these like things that, you know, I don't believe works as well as this other treatment that worked for me and has worked for literally thousands of my friends.
Right.
So when, you know, insurance can be kind of, you know, state-run facilities. There's some great ones out there. I don't want to act like, you know.
Right, right.
But
there's a lot of red tape to get through with your insurance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, and what's a typical stay? Is it a month? Is it two? Is it three? What would a typical stay be?
The Plymouth House. Matter? The Plymouth House is a month.
Right.
Oh, a month max.
Yeah, and then you can also, though, after that, you could, you know, become a. What is it called? A monitor there, and you know, get stay for free if you want to continue your treatment. You can apply to be a monitor, so you're going to be one of the, you know, mid managers, you know, in between the higher ups and and the people that are staying there. So you can further your stay, but a lot of the other.
It's a 12-step program. The Plymouth House is like you go there and they lay out the 12 steps out of the AA book, and for most people, you know, it's funny because people in the outside world. To get through like the step work, it could take years.
Right, right.
Because it's life, like, you know. Right. And I mean, the people that do that are amazing, that actually can thoroughly go through the steps on the outside. It's hard. And some people do it, and I'm always amazed by that. But what the Plymouth House does is you're in this place and you're there for one reason, and it's like you just push, and you usually complete it within a month. But after the month's up, like, the next step is, like, rewiring you into the world. Like, a lot of people get back out and they have no living skills. That's, like, something you need to learn. So,
right,
you
right.
know, like, so then you get sent to a sober living house, and that costs money. But, you know, but what the beautiful thing with the sober living house is after a month or so, you know, you start to work. Like, my parents helped me pay for the first month.
Right.
At the sober living house. They helped me pay for my treatment, then helped me pay for my first month. And then it was like up to me to start working and to pay. And that's, you need that. You know, you need to be started to held accountable.
So
it's life.
You had that help from your parents, but I'm sure you've seen people who don't have that help from their parents. So
many people.
Right.
Kind of how this came about. Like, we've been. There's been people that, you know, in my life and, like, with my sister, like, countless times I call Christian. I'm saying, like, how can we, you know, get my sister somewhere? Like, how can we, will they do a scholarship for us? Or, you know, he's dealt with numerous people because of just, you know, him being in sobriety and helping people. And they'll call him all the time and just say, like, family members mostly, or, you know, people that are desperate and they're like, all right, I'm done. Like, I need help. How can you get me help? Or family members saying, like, I need help. Where can we put this person? Can you help us with money? Is there anyone that would help us with money?
Because
it's a lot of money, you know? It can be a lot of money. And if that person is willing to go into a treatment program, it's like this little span of time that when they're, like, giving up. Because sometimes they'll be like, actually, never mind. I'm going to go get high. Like, you know?
Right.
So it's like when someone's ready to go, like, you want to, like, be able to get those funds and get them. There's, like, you know, a little time period that you have, so.
Right. So when did you start, how many months has it been since you started raising money?
Since November. Since Thanksgiving was when we first put the website out, and we had, like, a PayPal link for people to donate, so it's been
three, 4 months?
Since November.
And how much have you raised since then?
I think it's been, like, 10,000.
Wow.
But we're really pushing this golf tournament, so a lot of people have, you know, sponsoring holes, and it's going to cost a lot also to put the tournament on to do everything. So, like, it's like right
costs
now.
It costs money to make money.
The goal was to get
to
11,000, like, when the tournament's paid for.
Yeah, after everything's said and done with the tournament.
We have 11,000 in the bank. And then with that, you know, with 11,000 you know, I think we can start, you know, and plan to get at least two people in.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and then see where it goes. You know, we're not going to quit. Like, the fundraising has to be an ongoing thing.
Well, right. That's going to be your main focus, because that's how you're going to, how you're going to get your funding and to continue to be able to place people, you know? So, when you reach an attainable goal that you think that you could send, a couple of people, how's that vetting process going to work? Like, how do you get the word out there that, okay, we exist and we're here to help you. Mm-hmm. Are you going to have an application, or what is that? What is that process going to look like?
That's been like one of the things. Like, you know, how do you go about who's ready, who's going to do this, who's taking advantage of the funding? You know, because like, we're working hard to raise this money, and I don't want to just give it to somebody who doesn't like really want to go after this. And I think that's where we're going to have like an application in that we're going to ask questions, you know, like just stuff that I can kind of feel the person out. And I think I have really good intuition with drug addicts and alcoholics, kind of where they're at.
Right.
I can ask certain, you know, before anything happens, like the final like stage of the thing would be a sit down with myself and another one of my buddies who's in recovery, and we'll just ask the questions, and I'm going to kind of see what they've been through, you know, what treatment they've done before, you know, kind of see where they're at, like how close to that, you know, the so-called bottom, where they're at with that. Because I believe it makes a big difference.
From my experience with my friends out west, there are certain things that people will say in order for you to believe that they're on the right path, and then
you can see the look of desperation too.
Yeah,
you can literally look into somebody's eyes and kind of see, like, you can feel it almost like they've had enough, you know. Yeah. Or you can just see kid who, like, you know, they're sitting in that room because their parents really want them to go to treatment,
right?
And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't really work out well when that's the case, you know. Not that the parents shouldn't stop pushing them, because that kid will get, my parents pushed me nonstop, and I wasn't ready to get better for 8 years. I mean, there was a lot of time of being harassed by my parents.
You're allowed to swear
I swear. I do that a lot.
Cut that one out.
But, you know, not saying that, because parents should push, you know, like that is just another, like, when a drug addict's been a drug addict and they're getting pushed into treatment, that's a pain in the ass for the drug addict. You start getting sick and tired of being annoyed by people, having to go to different treatments. And that's how you kind of get to the end of the road, I believe. Like, you actually get so fed up with it, you finally say, shit, maybe I should try getting better. Like, I don't want to do this no more. This sucks. I'm sick of this revolving door.
Right.
Maybe I should try to get better. And a lot of times that's because you keep getting pushed and pushed and pushed into these treatment centers and stuff.
So you say you went twice So what was the time from the first time? Then you lapsed. What was the second time? Like, was it a year? Was it 6 months? Was it 2 years? Like, what was the time in between the two?
With me?
Yeah.
When I started trying to go to treatment?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I went a lot more than twice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
a couple million.
I started probably going to, like, I probably went to my first detox when I was, I started, like, really getting high, I'd say I was 22, and I probably went to my first detox at, like, 25, 26, and then, like, I'd go to detox, and, like, my first time was, like, I went to detox, I came out a week later, like, told my parents everything was great, I was probably getting high that night, but was able to, like, control it a little bit, like, you know, and then that would fall apart, and then I'd go to a detox, and, you know, the second, you know, and I come up with some other lie, and, you know, but I, you know, I could usually, like, in the beginning, I could probably go, like, maybe 6 months between detoxes before stuff would get really bad.
Oh, okay.
And then every time I would have to, like, make up a lie, or I'd have to do something like, oh, maybe I'll try that outpatient. Like, I'd have to, like, do something a little different for them to be okay with me, like, coming back.
Right.
And then, like, I'd go to, like, treatment centers for, like, months in the Salvation Army. I went there twice for, like, 4 months one time, 5 months one time, 3 months one time.
Right.
I mean, I've been to sober living houses all throughout New England, you know. And a lot of times, by the end of it, I was just, like, getting high for, like, a month. But the destruction you can cause in a month.
Right.
Like, I'll burn a whole world down in a month.
Right.
Like, you know, like, yeah. It's great. That's the thing about it. Especially, like, when you're, like, a full-blown addict and your tolerance is high and, you know, you need hundreds of dollars
right.
a day to oh get high. God. Like, you caught the destruction you cause, right, you know.
How do you come out of that? Like, besides everyone saying to you, like, you know, stop, you know, all these things. And, you know, what was your aha moment or how did you even get to that spot?
It's a great question because I can't ever, like, really put my finger on it. I really believe the difference, like, I went to the Plymouth House the first time, and I got all this, like, I went through the steps, and I had all this, like, new information, and I was on fire, and I was all about recovery, and I was, like, boasting with pride, but I was, like, I was arrogant, too, like, you know, and I think I was, like, doing stuff for the wrong reason. It was more about, like, showing off than, like, you know. And then all of a sudden I relapsed. And that relapse was probably the worst one of them all because people actually saw me, like, wow, Christian's really changed, right? Before, I don't think people, like, I'd come out and they would just be like, that's the same old Christian. But I think second to last time, like, people saw a difference in me because there was a difference in me.
Right.
But not, like, a complete change. Mm-hmm. You know, and I still had drug addict tendencies, like, I thought I could, like, you know, be sober and still, like, try to, like, sell pot. Like, just do stuff that doesn't mesh with the stuff you need to do. Like, I, you know, I wasn't doing stuff correctly. And I ended up getting high again. And then I ended up going back to the Plymouth House because, like, that was the only time I ever felt the difference. So I was like, all right. I shouldn't have said it. My mother begged me to go back to the Plymouth House because I was actually, I called her from a detox and I was like, my idea was to move to California and be like a homeless guy. That was literally, like, I was calling it, like, I was done. I was calling it quits. I was like, I can't do this no more. Like, I'm sick of, like, killing my family.
Right.
That was the biggest thing. I was so sick of letting everybody down.
Right.
I was just ashamed. I was like, this, like, I didn't want to do it no more. And she begged and pleaded with me. I went to the Plymouth House again. And, you know, I kind of just, like, I sat there and I listened, like, you know, and I, like, wasn't, like, so outgoing, and I was just kind of, like, beaten down. And then I talk about this a lot. It's crazy because I'm not, like, a God person. I wasn't raised in the, like, I went to Sunday school, like, barely. I don't remember anything.
Right.
Like, I'm not a super religious guy. I love my church just because the people that are in it, they're so great. But I'm not, like, a God guy. I have a relationship with God, but it's not, a religious
say. Right, yeah.
And I got out of the Plymouth House. It was Christmas Eve. And the whole time I was in this Plymouth House, I was, like, just, like, broken down. And I was afraid because I had no compassion. Like, I was talking to my mom on the phone. Like, I'd call her, like, once or twice a week just to be like, hey, what's up? I'm still here. Because they never even knew. Like, because with my track record, I would just disappear from places.
Right.
And wouldn't call or, like, I would just go AWOL for months.
Oh, my God.
You know, and then my poor mother's, like, can't sleep at night because she doesn't know if I'm dead.
Right, exactly. You know?
And I should have been, like, to church that Christmas Eve, and I was like this hardened person, man. And I've never been like that. I've always been super compassionate, like like almost over the top. Like I put, like, I think of other people, like, all the time before I think of myself, right, to the point of fault, like that it screws my life up.
Right.
And I was sitting in that church, and like the pastor's doing her thing, and it's Christmas Eve, and it's beautiful, and like all the candles are lit. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, just wondering about my future, and I'm like, how am I gonna do this? Like, oh God, I'm like, I'm coming up on 30 now and I got nothing. Like, I'm so far in debt from stealing. Like, I'm just like a shitty human. Like, I'm just a self, like, I really am. There's no other way to describe it. I'm a bad person. And not only am I a bad person, I'm having like a hard time feeling bad for the people that I've hurt, which is even scarier because now I'm like wondering, am I a sociopath or maybe like I'm a psychopath? Like maybe like that's what I am.
Right.
And she said this like thing, and she was like, you know, if there's anybody you want to sick out there and you want to pray for. And I took that like moment and I just asked God, you know, I was like, please, you know, just help me, like help me feel some compassion. And it's, and as soon as I said those words, tears started pouring down my face. And like, I didn't like feel like I was going to cry. Like I had, and then right. I had this like, it was, I'm telling you, man, like, I've heard about these, like, God moments right, and all this stuff, right. and I've never, like, it's yeah. just not who I am, but I experienced one, and it gave me this, like, boost of what I needed. And I went into the sober house the day after Christmas, and they recommended that I went and made some, like, crazy amends. Like, I did some crazy shit, and I had to, like, go tell these people, like, I stole thousands and thousands of dollars from you. I walked into their houses and offices,
right.
and I told on myself.
Right.
Like, and, you know, and I would never have done that before.
Right.
never. Right. Like, no, like mm-hmm. I always, like, shit stopped working for me because I always, like, I drove the bus and I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I'm not right. comfortable going and telling these people I stole all this money from
right,
them.
Right, right.
You know, and trying to right all my wrongs. But, you know, I listened and I took advice and that was the difference. That's when I started to, like, get this shit. Like, I actually was like... Like, I'm not doing this right. What I know doesn't work. Like,
right.
And that, it's a hard concept for a lot of people. Like, my whole life, like, I was in charge of me. Like, I'm doing what I want to do, and that's that. Like, right. I never even, like, I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but I very rarely, growing up, like, even kind of took a second to process other people's, like, information, or you shouldn't do this. Like, you know, that, maybe that's what has to do with my drug, you know, me being a drug addict. But I struggled with that.
Mm-hmm,
like,
right.
I always thought my way was the best way. Because right. it made sense to me.
Right. Well, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I couldn't even take the time. If you gave me a piece of advice, I always struggled to even, like, sit down for a second and be like, maybe that person, like, yeah, wow, that's actually mm-hmm. good advice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? And I started taking advice, and you know, it's crazy, the change in me.
So when you came, well, I know you were in a different state for a little while, right? Mm-hmm. But were you in Gloucester at that time?
No.
So you were, so then you came back to Gloucester.
Yep.
And I mean, we're not going to sugarcoat that this city has a huge problem.
Mm.
So I'm sure you probably came back to friends that were still.
Yeah. Everybody still was using. Like, you can't come back to Gloucester. People are telling me you can never live here again. You know, like, there's no chance you can come back to Gloucester. Like, and I was like, I've been around this whole country again. Hi.
Right.
Like, the whole country.
Right.
You could send me to Alaska and I would find drugs. I guarantee it.
Right.
Like, in the middle of the woods, if I'm an active addiction mm-hmm. and I'm getting high at this time, literally, put me on Mount Kilimanjaro and I will get high.
Right.
It's a fact. Like,
right.
it's not the place. It's not the geography.
Okay.
It's where you are at.
So there's no... So when you're coming back and you're seeing your friends that are, you know, that are close to you and you see that this is happening,
mm.
did you... have to distance yourself from them or
yeah.
I mean, and then get, you know, get new friends that are in the same place that you are at? I mean, was that a struggle for you or did you come back being like, I'm good?
One of the greatest blessings, you know, I received is, like, I met my wife, Caitlin, like, with 7 months, right when I came back, like, you know, I fell in love with Kate and, like, you know, she was there for me, and, like, she knew, like, we would stay up at night, like, she just moved into that apartment, and there was, like, nothing in there, and I would literally stay up with her all night long, entertaining her with, like, my whole past, like, so there's nothing that she doesn't know.
Right, right.
And, dude, like, this group of friends I have, I don't even know how it happened, like, it's so crazy because I have friends all over the place in recovery, but nobody has this, like, thing that me and my boys in Gloucester have. Like, Rob Benjamin got better, and then, like, Ambie got better, and then, like, I got better, and then Mike Mann and Cliffy and mm-hmm. Kyle White and Georgie, like... And
it's like a random array of
it just, like,
from
it was
all
just, like,
kind of,
like, all,
different
like...
Ages, all different
yeah.
groups. all got sober at and different
we're all
times,
yeah,
you know?
And we're all like,
and you're all hilarious to watch on Facebook as you rag on each other. Yeah. I mean, you just have this like, yeah, you know, like you guys just
you
have
see
this
the group
brotherhood.
Text.
Oh
yeah.
My god, I don't, yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, this just this brotherhood that mm-hmm. you know you guys have,
and it just
and
fell into
you
our laps.
All have each other's back, and I mean, that's just. Yeah,
it's crazy. It's just
yeah.
like God was like, I don't know. I don't know how it happened or why it happened. It just like, you know, it's not even like we tried to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like
it
we
just,
didn't like.
Right.
It's not like we're out there like recruiting people. Right. Like you know what I'm saying? It just like
right,
it just
right.
like fell together.
Yeah.
In this like perfect way.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I think too, once like you got out of the sober house and like you meet a bunch of people once you're in that house or that specific mm. treatment, and like you bond with them too. So like you
yeah.
know, and you lean on each other,
yeah.
and it's
right.
like, and it's cool to like go to meetings and like you
yeah.
know do all those things, and you have a bunch of guys that you can all go with, pick each other up, go out to eat, and it's like a big, it's like a bonding, you know, experience with
right.
them as well. And like it's like, all right, if you stick with the sober people, you know, you have to.
You know, and I have, I mean, still to this day, I have friends that are still in active addiction.
Right.
And some of them are honest to me, and those are my favorite ones. Those are the ones I still can be friends with.
Right.
I can't be friends with the dishonest ones anymore.
Right.
Because it just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, come on, man. Like,
right.
I see you. Mm-hmm. Like, I was with you. I know how you get high. Like.
Right.
Like, I know it's okay.
Right.
You know, like, I'm here if you want to get better. Like, I'm literally, like, anything you need, I'm going to help you with. But the other one, you know, the ones that will sit down, will come in, and I'll go out front, I'll go in the sub shop, we'll sit down and talk. You know, they'll tell me, yeah, man, like, you know, I'm still not ready.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I get it. You know,
right.
If you do get ready and if you feel like you want help.
And how long have you been sober now? You said seven
yeah,
years?
This is, it was 7 years in December 1st.
It's amazing.
7 years. Yeah, it is amazing. It goes by fast.
Right? So when you guys started this, did you have any backlash or anything negative from anybody? Because you know you can never do anything good without peace, times without people
right.
being negative. Do you have any misconceptions or, you know, anything going? I mean, if not, that's amazing. But, you know, is there, you know...
Not yet, really. Okay. I know, you know, we've been asking people to, like, sponsor holds and stuff, and we don't know if people are saying no because they don't, you know, if they don't want to be associated with, like, you know, something like that, or, but, not really, I don't think.
The stigma's dying, man. Who doesn't have somebody affected by this?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's people, like... That, and that's half the thing. It's like we need that just to die.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like because and it slowly is because everybody is affected by this. If it's not somebody in your like direct family,
right.
it's somebody like right outside the fence.
And like and like Bridget was talking about, nobody talks about it and
yeah.
everybody just keeps it, you know, bottled up, and that's why, you know, it's like I got the call when my uncle was 45 and OD'd.
Mm.
So I was on, I've been there. I've been on the other end of that, you know, of that phone call.
Mm.
So you know, it's just.
And the crazy thing is the most healthy thing for a family to do, like a family who has a close person like that's struggling inside that family, is to try to talk to somebody because the family becomes so toxic.
Right.
So toxic. Like I can remember my parents used to try to shelter Dylan, who's 9 years younger than me. And they tried their best not to include Dylan in knowing what was going on with me.
Right.
You know, he wasn't he was going into like he was a freshman in college, like when I entered treatment for the last time.
Okay.
So leading up to that, all his high school years, like he knows what's going on.
Right.
But we did our best and nobody outside our family knew. So there's my parents like struggling.
Right.
By themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And if I could, and it would have just been so much healthier for them. Like my mom started going to learn to cope at the very end.
Right.
But like, you know, like to keep all that sickness bottled up in a house and not include my little brother. My little brother like ended up like freaking out. I mean, like I know guys, like stop talking like I'm not in this like,
right,
like
right.
Stop a conversation because I walk into a room is awkward. Like
right.
Stop that.
Right.
Like include me. Like I'm part of this family.
Right.
It's like we tried to protect everybody and not tell anybody if, like, you know, so like the family name or whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
But it's
right.
like it doesn't help anybody. It just makes people sicker and not, you know, mothers not having somebody else to lean on, or like a dad not having somebody to lean on. They become sicker than the drug addict.
Right, right. You know? And well, what my family did, they went the other way. They just stopped talking to my uncle.
Yeah.
So, you know, by the end, it was, you know, it was me and my dad, and they were the only ones that, you know, talked to him. And I guess he was a functioning, if you could, if you will, because you used to see him, used to come down, used to see him all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, my family kind of went the other way. Yeah. And then when he died, they're all like, oh, maybe I should have been there, been around. I'm like, a little bit too late, I think. You know what I mean? So it's just. So
that's a hard thing to grasp, too, because there's a fine line between enabling somebody.
Yeah.
And not helping them when they need help.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I could talk on that subject for days if, you know, another time. No.
Hey, you can come as a return guest. Yeah. We love it.
Because that's something that people need help with, too. You don't, people don't really know if they're enabling a drug addict or they're getting them what they actually need.
Right.
Because it's a super thin line.
And I think what's great about having you both here as well is that, you know, what your sister had gone through, and then you being here, you know, and talking about it is, you know, is kind of destigmatizing this, putting faces and voices and names, you know, because it is a running joke in this town. Mm-hmm. It's a running thing. Right. But until you get a name and a voice, until I saw your video a few years ago, you know, you don't really know anything. And then all of a sudden you start to see the people that struggle. And you, all of a sudden, once you hear someone's story, you start to sit back and think about all those other people that might be going through that.
Right.
That was one of the things that when Alicia started this podcast, I kind of helped her and helped tell other people's stories, because everyone's got a story.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been, you know, tiptoeing around certain things for a long time. And then I think when we saw the fundraiser come up for the golf tournament, and I mean, when I did see, you know, the posts about your sister, because I remember going to your house when I was young with Rachel, like every Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like, that's kind of a bummer, because I always remember her just being, like, you know, loud and boisterous and fun and hilarious and stuff like that. And I remember a few fiestas where she would be there and stuff like that. You know, it's one of those things. You know, and I can't really touch or talk about it on the aspect of what you've gone through, but I've met so many people in San Francisco that have been in recovery.
Right.
You know, and stuff. Half of my softball team, I played on 5 gay men softball teams, and most of them were in recovery. And I was like, how come you never come to the fundraisers? Like, I'm in recovery. And I'm like, cool. Tell me more about that. Right. Okay.
Right.
And they're like, you know, it's just not a good vibe for me to be there. Just for me, I just rather would not be at the bar.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I respect that. Props to you.
Right.
Other people would give them shit. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a cornhole league right now. And, you know, some of them are a lot younger. So they don't actually know how old I am. Which is,
you know. Some. They're all like,
they all think babies. I'm 26. But but the thing is that they.
You're not 26?
No. Believe it or not, I've seen some shit. And a lot of them are like, I just find it rude that some people don't even go into the bar. I'm like, here's a thought. Maybe they can't go into the bar.
Right.
You ever think of that?
I know.
Well, no. I didn't think of that. Well, yeah. There's like 8 combat vets in here, and they're all under 29. You really think they should be drinking?
Right.
Probably not.
Right.
You don't know their story. Leave it alone. Play your game.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things. And I have another friend who reached out to me right before, right as I started initiating conversation with you. He had asked for one of my family members' phone numbers. And he was like, you know, is there any chance I can get your cousin's phone number? Because, you know, we stopped talking when I was using, and I was a piece of shit, and I feel real bad. And I might not do anything with that phone number, but I want to have it just so I can make amends if I get the courage.
Oh.
And I was like,
cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. Let me see if I've got the right phone number, because that dude changes his phone number all the time. Like, I don't know. Let me make sure. And so I reached out to his brothers and I was like, is this the right phone number? And, you know, I just reached out to him and said, hey, he wants to reach out to you. Because I wasn't here when that all went down.
Yeah.
So I didn't know any of that happened. Mm-hmm. You know? So, but it, like, seeing people that are trying to make that kind of, that step, you know, years after, like you were saying in the 12-step program, people are still trying to live those 12 steps. Those 12 steps don't go away.
Mm-hmm.
It takes years for you to make those approaches and stuff like that.
Yeah. Right. They've been around since, what, 1936?
Yeah.
Like, only stuff that works stays, right?
Right, right.
It's not like this new fad.
Right,
there's a lot of new fads out there, but for something that's been around for almost 100 years now,
right?
You know, that's why I believe.
And I think too, a lot of it is a lot of people hearing the actual process. A lot of people are just scared and they just don't know; they're just ignorant to it.
Yeah, super.
Right,
you know, and maybe
first thing
hearing
this talks about turning your life over to God. Like, that's the first. You go in there and you read these steps on the wall, and you see something about turning your life over to God. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that ain't for me.
Right.
You're like, peace out with this.
Yeah, that's not what it's about, though.
Right. It takes, like, a super strong person. Like, I've seen people going through the steps and, you know, things that they have to do. And I don't know if I could do that, you know, write down all of your resentments and go in and face people that you completely screwed over and, like, surrender. Like, I don't know if I could even do that. Like, I give so much, like, respect and props to you guys.
So how long was your sister battling?
Since like 2000. Well, it was like 2010 to, I think it was 2010 or 11 where she started, and I think she was using like pills like for a long time, just under wraps that like no one even really knew about.
We all like for a long started time. Getting higher on the same
Christian
time.
And her are really good friends. Went to high school together. They were like best friends.
Right.
But Jill never like. I got it. I got the ism a lot before.
Right.
Like she did.
Right.
Like I went 0 to 100, and Jill like managed to dabble
for a long
for,
time
for like years and years and years and years and years. But it always I can remember being like an active IV user, and I remember the conversation vividly. We're driving down the extension, and like I think I was actually going to get Jill pills so I can make a little money to buy myself heroin. And I was like, I can remember being like, why are you still doing pills? I was like, why don't you just start shooting dope? It's better and cheaper. And she's like, I'll never do that. And I remember telling her, yeah, I said the exact same thing 2 years ago. Like, you know, and it's just, it's inevitable. It's a progression. It's a disease. Like,
but with her, like, she kind of, she went into a program because of pills and a detox.
Yeah.
She got out, and then she was like, oh, actually, I don't feel safe. I want to go back in, like, I'm going to use. So we got her back in, and then she met someone in there and ended up actually, like, way worse off. Mm-hmm. Like, the next year was, like, her disappearing.
It's like you go to jail,
Boston.
Go to jail a criminal, and you come out a convict.
Yeah.
Type of
it was
deal.
Like that same.
Right,
it was like,
it happens.
She went down, like, a rabbit hole, like, really deep. And then that was lasted for like a year and a half, and then she was sober for a couple of years in between.
She was.
Okay.
She did.
Yeah.
She put together almost 3 years.
She worked at Destino's.
She fell like just short of 3 years.
Yeah.
I remember it. Because she actually made a post, a 3 year post.
Yeah.
And I knew
on Facebook.
I knew that was bullshit. But I was like, I knew, but she didn't even know that I knew. But I like me and Jill had a good enough relationship that she could, like, nothing even had to be said. Like, I could give her a look, and she could give me a look.
Right.
And, you know, and it wasn't, it was just kind of, and we talked finally about it, and I was just like, dude, you know, it was a bump in the road. Let's just pick up where you left off.
Right.
Like, time, literally, it's like, you didn't burn the world down. You didn't do anything terrible. You made a mistake.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Right.
Like, it's okay. It's not like, everybody puts this, like, oh, it's the, like, oh, I had 3 years, but it's like, as long as you don't, like, waste everything that happened in those 3 years, like, if you, you know, if you get back on the horse and you try again, it's okay. You know, it's not the end of the world. And at that point, it wasn't. Like, it wasn't, you know, we wish we could go back to that day because, unfortunately, the end of the world happened. You know?
Right.
And that's...
But it's like, no matter what, like, it just sucks that you can't make someone do something. Like, how bad do you... Like, we tried, like, Christian and I tried so hard with her. Like, we, like...
Remember we sat in
two and a half hours we've tried. I remember... Yeah.
We sat... We went looking for her in Boston one day.
She was like six hours. Yeah.
Homeless in Boston. And we sat on Canal Street because we knew she was going to that methadone clinic. And we sat there and sat there. Like, it was fucking so long. Pouring out. I can remember it so vividly.
And right before we got her to go to the Plymouth House. And
of course, she was the last... Like, remember the clinic closed at like noontime and she went at like 11:57?
Yeah.
Bitch. Seriously.
That was the worst.
Literally. Yeah. It's perfect, Jill.
We're like, all right, we're going to leave. She's not coming. And then, like, she walks up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we... She never got into, like, the steps, though. I think she was, like, never really ready to... She just couldn't get over that, like, hump.
I know.
But even before she passed away, like, she wasn't super active, like, into... Like, she wasn't living around here. She had a boyfriend, and they lived. But they weren't, like... Yeah, she... I don't think she was using, like, heroin at the time.
No, I don't think she was, like...
year before
And the crazy
that.
Thing is, that's, like...
Actively, she might have had a
That's when
up.
It becomes, like, more dangerous.
Right.
Because you have no tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Like, so, do you... I mean...
Like, I was never really, like, it's crazy to say this, but I was never in, like, super endangerment of, like, overdosing because my tolerance was always so high.
Oh, Lord.
You know, those are the people that don't overdose. Like, the people that overdose are the people that, one last time, or just getting out of jail, or just getting out of treatment.
Right.
Like, it's always, like, you hear it, like, the one last time.
Right. Or what, now you're hearing about, obviously, everything being laced. So, now people are... doing what they think is a normal amount for them and it's a bad batch of something
that's the other
thing, you know, and that's what you hear, that's what you're hearing.
It's a different animal
now. Even more terrifying now than it is. That's why it's so important for people to
Heroin like doesn't exist anymore.
I know
they've like got this synthetic formula and they make this like bootleg fentanyl and that's what you're getting now. It's like I started using, it's funny, because at the end of my using, I was getting fentanyl, not knowing it was fentanyl, but I was passing all my drug tests, because the drug tests weren't hip to fentanyl at that point. So I'm literally getting
like
high.
It's a different, like, opioid.
Yeah, it doesn't pop.
That is the craziest thing ever.
Well, that's just like gabapentin is now on the hit list, which is interesting because, I don't know, someone talked to me about it a few years back, and I was like, how is that not on the list?
Yeah, that was like that was
that
like
is
the
a bad drug.
Super sober house drug. Before that same reason, you could go eat a handful of Johnny's in at that point in time.
I got it.
None of the drugs. So everybody in these sober living houses that actually didn't want to get better would just get high on gabapentin because the drug test at that time didn't test for gabapentin.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man. We're all like... You can always, like I said, put me on a mountain and I'll find a way to get high. Mm-hmm. It goes for every other person in active addiction. We'll always find a way around something.
Right, right. So, let's keep talking about the golf tournament.
Yeah.
So, talk about that. When is it? Where is it? What's
it
everything
is,
about it?
Yeah, it's Monday, May 13th at Bass Rocks Golf Club. Tee off is at 1 p.m. And we are looking for people to sponsor holes. We have different sponsorship levels, like, you know, $250 is just basically a whole sponsorship, and then it goes up from there. It's like $1,000 is the next one. And looking for our grand platinum sponsor, $5,000.
Wow.
We want to find that company that has like hasn't dipped into any of their charitable giving, because I'm pretty sure I'm not. You know, I've heard other people like. You're almost built in like $5,000 a year to a lot of companies as a tax write-off.
Okay.
You know, clearly we're talking companies that can do this and can afford it.
Right.
Because I don't really know the ins and outs. That's probably Justin who could answer that better. But from what I can kind of understand, that's kind of where, like, the line is, like the $5,000 mm-hmm. get it back on your taxes type of deal.
Right.
We need a platinum sponsor. You know, we need that company that's going to step up and, mm-hmm. you know, and it's out there, and we're going to find the right fit, and, mm-hmm. you know, they're kind of going, they'll get the big banner, and, you know.
Yeah, I have a feeling it might be, you know, it might be a company that was, that's been hit by this.
It's going to be near, it's right, gonna it's going to be near close and dear to that. Heart. That's right.
I would rather see that than some corporate sponsor just, you know, throwing money at it. But I'm sure, you know, mm-hmm. in Cape Ann, in the North Shore, they're, you know.
And we're doing off, like, company. It's crazy, the how many people are coming out of the woodwork, like.
Right.
We're just starting to go out there and, like, do, like, the door-to-door thing. But, I mean, I've had, like, 40 Facebook messages of people.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. That's
awesome.
Like, it's, you know.
Well, and hopefully this podcast will help you.
Yes.
Yeah. You can put this in your little media outreach and stuff like that, too.
Because we are, like, looking for, like, raffle items, too, and stuff. Because there'll be raffle prizes, silent auction, 50-50. What else? It'll be a fun day.
It will be a fun day.
So how are you, so tell us all about, do you have we know you have the Facebook page. Do you have a website, or what are all of the social media outlets that you're on and that you're using?
Mm-hmm. Right now it's Facebook, and it's just the Sunrise Fund that you can look it up. And then the sunrisefund.com is our website. Okay. And that has a lot of the information, like background information, our board information, 501c number for people that have donated, which is on the letter too. There's a letter and a sponsor sheet on there as well, and a PayPal link for donating.
There's also a contact link for families person that might be
struggling
for that as well. I did see that.
Yeah, that'll be the next step once we get some funds secured to really start boosting.
There's also two helpful links for detoxes and local treatment centers in case, you know, for before that they reach out to us if they need help getting into a detox or places. There's a help spot there.
How'd you come up with the name?
So we wanted to think of something. I didn't want to just say the Jill Latham Fund or some sort of, because you could forget a name. But she always loved to go watch the sunrise. And she always loved taking pictures of it. If you looked at her Facebook or her Instagram, there's just always a sunrise or a sunset. She just loved the beauty of it. And there's a quote on the site too, after, you know, every dark night, the sun will rise. So it's just even after the crappiest day that you have, there's still going to be a sunrise the next day.
Right, right.
So it's another chance, you know, at living or, you know, making your life better. So thought it was a good fit. I think Caitlin thought of it.
Did she?
Yeah, I think it was so. Perfect. Yeah.
Because Jill literally would always, she'd go sit by Good Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Once a week, she would.
She'd sometimes go to the early bird meeting too, and in Gloucester, and then go watch the sunrise before or after that. So.
Yeah. It fit perfect.
Yeah, it did. It fit really perfect, and now I get to see the sunrise every time I look at the website or the Facebook.
Right. So, you've been sober for 7 years, and you've been watching Jill off and on all this time. So how is that being on the other side with one of your best friends? And, you know.
The hardest part for me is watching the family struggle, you know. It's not... I sit there and, I'll see the drug addict struggling and, I feel for him. But I also know, help's out there. If you really, want to get better, you know, let's get you better. The problem is the family's so powerless. That's the hardest part. This isn't even about getting, drug addicts better. It's about getting families better. Because if you have somebody in active addiction in your family, your family's running on one cylinder out of eight. The family's exhausted, and it's, you know, mothers don't sleep, you know, going to, you just, it's like the person's dead, but they're not dead.
Right.
It sucks. Right. Like, you're always walking on eggshells. Like, you know, Jackie lived it. Like, you know, my sister and brother and my family, they lived it.
Right.
Like, I see it now. And that's the biggest hurt for me and, like, reminder for me. Like, I don't think about, like, the times I was dope sick. I don't, like, that stuff's, I don't even, like, think about that anymore. I can, like, if I really want to dig deep, I can remember those feelings. But now the stuff that, like, you know, is the reminder to me is, like, to see, like, pain in the family members and, like, mm-hmm. realize, like, Jesus Christ, I caused so much of that.
Right.
Like, we got to try to make this better.
Right.
Like, because, you know, it's, like, this, I don't know, it's, like, this mm-hmm. mission that's instilled in me now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to see parents. It sucks. Right. You know, I don't want to go to no more funerals of people we love. Like, it right. sucks. You don't right. want to look across and see a mother or sister. You know, it sucks. Right. It really does. And there's a way out. Like, there is. Like, it's, like, people are getting better now. Like, mm-hmm. fast, too. Like, it's happening.
Right.
And people are seeing it. Like, you know, and that's why I'm so, like, about, let's get it out there. Like, this doesn't have to be autonomous. Like,
right.
like I'm not. Like, I'm out there. Like, you know, I love AA and I love all that stuff, but like, this is we're not dealing with a bottle of whiskey anymore,
right?
You know,
yeah.
That's kind of like, people are dying. Like, right. this needs to be. Families are dying. Not even drug addicts are dying. Like, families die with them.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like, a piece yeah. of a family dies.
Yep.
Like, in the, now that weight's carried by their living members. Like, it's not as simple as just like, oh, just another drug addict.
Right.
That drug
lived
addict.
Lived that too. My yeah. Grandmother died of, when my uncle OD'd a year later to the day, she had a stroke from stress
right.
of my uncle. And 2 months later right. after that, my grandfather died of a broken heart.
There you go.
So
look at that spider
web. You know, that's, right. that's, it's just, it's what.
That's right.
You know, and so you're right. Yeah. It's literally, it you know.
Rips families apart. Right. It does. Yep. It's crazy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know? So where obviously you just started this and you obviously want to help as many people as you can. Do you have a vision of where you want to be in 5 years and 10 years? Or, I mean, obviously you never want to see this go away.
Mm-hmm.
So what is, you know, do you have a mission statement?
The mission statement.
I think we had like something like up there.
Yeah. It's just basically to give addicts financial assistance yeah. and hope.
Okay.
And families hope.
It's, right. I've thought about that. Like mm-hmm. in like the mission would be to help one drug addict to save one family, and that drug addict helps one drug addict to save one family.
Right.
You know, it's like the branch effect on a tree. Like the right. little sprout grows, you know, and another branch grows off of that, and another branch grows off right. of that. Like, we're not going to be able to do this, like, alone. Like, we're not going to be right. able to get to where we need to be
mm-hmm.
with, you know, just our manpower and our crew and, like, everybody mm-hmm. helping. It's awesome, and we're doing great things right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to get people better, you know?
Right.
And not even with our funds. Let's say somebody, like, hears the idea of treatment and considers it, and they go into treatment because it's being talked about, or like, oh, right. they see somebody and that person got better, and like,
mm-hmm.
like that's how recovery works.
Right.
It's like, it's a we thing, you know, like
right.
it has to be that way. So it's like, I don't know. I don't even, you know, Christ, I barely think about tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
let alone
one day at a time.
Yeah.
Right?
But even if we get like two people better in 1 year, like, oh. and they, you know, that would be like amazing.
If we save right. one person,
then, I know,
we raised $1 million and we saved one life.
Right.
Right. You know, if I had $1 million, if we had $1 million in the bank, and they, this kid's going to die tomorrow of an overdose, like, you're going to spend $1 million to save his life? Yeah. Like, here, like, right?
Mm-hmm.
We save one person, one family. Like, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
that's a success.
Right.
You know? And that's, I think that's, you have to have that outlook. You know, because we were like, of course we'd love to get huge and all this mm-hmm. stuff, but it's like, then the, when we were talking about like the personal aspect kind of leaves, like the whole thing, like just kind of take our time and start with one person getting into treatment,
right?
And then maybe two, see where we're at, see what we can do, you know. And I think God's going to bless this foundation, and I think we're gonna keep it rolling.
Yeah, it's gonna go places.
There's mm-hmm. good people mm-hmm. surrounding us, and mm-hmm. we're in this unbelievable community.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking of doing like a few events per year too, and hoping this golf tournament turns into like an annual thing that we do every year. And
right.
Jill loved to play softball, so I know there might be another like a co-ed softball tournament. Yeah. And then all of her like the women's league, like they did one last September. They I think want to make that an annual one too. So there's right. like, you know, three events in 1 year is like amazing, you know, right. and that'll help us give that like kickstart to.
And those are events you don't necessarily have to like fundraise. Like the team pays $300 to play.
Right.
Because let's call a spade, you get sick of like, I know this firsthand is like fundraising, like you see all these things, like they could happen with like the cancer walk and stuff. Like it's like, it's such in your face all the time. It's like you get sick of
right.
donating and seeing it. Yeah. Like, because we don't want to be like, we don't want to become a burden. And like, right. It's you hate to say it like that because it's such a good cause.
Right.
But it's just, that's human nature. Yeah. Like, okay, enough with the Sunrise Fund. Like, I don't know if we've seen enough. Right? Like,
well, it's like, I'm it's sure just, people are saying
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it's human nature. And like, we get that. So we don't want to be over the top.
But, you know, not that other things are not amazing, but yours is more tangible. So if you're going to a breast cancer walk, you're going, you know, your money is pretty much going out into, you know, the
that's right.
you know, the world and right. you know, and we oh, we're going to touch a bigger
we have, yeah, exactly. we have a, definitely and a more you, personal effect.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the goal. So, yeah, so I would, you know.
That's why we decided not to go, because we were thinking about going like into another non-profit and like being like it's called like
an umbrella
thing. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
But then as soon as we do that, we fundraise, but we kind of lose the decision making behind how right. we get to do our money.
Right.
Like, you know, and another like thing is like, we're not going to say this is for women. But I think it's easier for men to get treatment and to get funding than it is for women. In my experience so far,
mm-hmm.
really? There's more, yeah, there's more.
It's more men sober houses, like hands down.
There's a lot more male drug addicts, mm-hmm. but that being said, there's still like, there's a lot of women out there that like, and women have a harder time coming forward.
Oh really?
Yeah.
You would kind of think it would be the other way around, I would think.
No.
No, really?
No, yeah. No, definitely not. There's more shame carried. That's my experience.
Okay.
The female definitely carries more shame in this. So that's the other thing. We want to put that out there.
Yeah.
You know, if this kind of like, it's almost like a girls come first type of, it's for Jill, you know,
right.
and we struggled.
Mm-hmm.
We struggled getting Jill funding,
mm-hmm.
you know, we did. And I
remember. Plymouth House was good.
Yeah, they're really good to us. Like,
she left after 3 days.
Because you just
brutal
sign yourself out.
Oh
right?
my god! Yeah, that's
yeah.
But and that's where they have like mm-hmm. that's where we have to make sure people, you know, are willing.
Yeah,
because
right.
we don't want to do all this hard work and not right. that it's for nothing. But when somebody leaves after 3 days, you feel like it was mm-hmm. for nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, yeah. So is there anything else that you want people to know about the Sunrise Fund? Is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to get out there and you want everyone to know?
I'm trying to think.
I mean, I think one thing we want to touch on is that once it gets going, like, we're going to be as translucent as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to, before we do anything, of course, we would have to get the permission of the people we're helping. And maybe, mm-hmm. but, I mean, I want to be able to use that website as, like, a you know, to, like, show, you know,
right.
somebody.
Who we're helping, what we're doing. Progress report.
Yeah,
stuff like
you know,
that,
so people yeah. can be like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
you know, and that's hard, you know, it's kind of a scary
that's,
thing,
that's
too,
hard,
because
not, yeah.
somebody comes along and they're doing great for 8-9 months. You know, and then they fall off, but
yeah.
that's okay. You know,
yeah.
that's what, like, if we were to get somebody who couldn't put a week together and we get them into a place and they go and they put 9 months together and then they fall off,
mm-hmm.
that's a success.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's because they learned a lot in those 9 months,
mm-hmm.
a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the chances are they're coming back. They got a taste of it and they're going to want more.
Mm-hmm.
once life gets hard again.
Now, can I ask you a question that, as you were just saying that, I'm like, ooh, I have a question that finally came up. So if someone was to go in for like 9 or 10 months mm. and say they relapse, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe they have such big shame about, like, you know, you mm. guys worked so hard to get mm. them in there and they did so well. And they were to come to you at the sub shop and be like, I fucked up. Mm-hmm. I fucked up royally. Like, you know, I think having you guys kind of be there to be like, mm-hmm. it's okay. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people not knowing that people are going to be there to say, it's okay.
I feel like we would reach out to them before they would reach out to us. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, you can sense that,
right? You know, even if we knew that like that happened and they relapsed, because the chances are they would probably try to hide
and go off the radar.
And that's yeah. the plan with keeping this kind of like close to the heart. Like, we want to be part of their lives. And that's the other reason, like, keeping it small, like, you know, helping. You know, if, let's say we get a handful of people in there. We have so many friends and so many people that have been around this. That we can, like, it's kind of going to form its own little, like, recovery network
right.
throughout our group.
Right.
And we want, you know.
Like, build a relationship with the person yeah. that we're helping and not just have them, like, pay the, write the check.
It's not just, yeah, we don't want to just pay bills.
Right, yeah. right. Of course, yeah.
We want to help
How
them.
Are you doing?
We want to help
What's
them
going
them,
on in your yeah. life? What have right. you, you know, what was your week like?
What's
like,
the next step?
Right.
Yeah, what's
let's
our
find,
next step?
Let's find you a job.
Yeah.
Want to get dinner tonight.
Right.
Like, type of stuff. People are lonely.
Right.
Drug addiction is a lonely thing, man. And people have a hard time making friends. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate.
Right.
I'm so, like, that all these people fell into my life. Like, I'm lucky.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm lucky. Like, a lot of people don't have that luxury. And they need that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jill's an introvert, man.
Mm-hmm.
She struggled with that.
Mm-hmm.
She struggled with, like, the shame of her past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with her close girlfriends that, like, are my close friends, you could always see that Jill, like, never... She almost felt like she didn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about. We all felt it with her.
Exactly.
So it's like we gotta like help these people belong again.
Right.
And it happens. It happens. It happens by getting up every day and going to work and trying to keep a smile on your face. And then all of a sudden another door opens and you're in a relationship and then you meet. It's life like anybody. But it's, you know, finding them the confidence to go through life again.
Right.
You know.
And, you know, and you're building something bigger. You're building a network for those people because the more people you help, they're going to, you know, learn about each other and be each other's group. And before you know it, you're going to have this, you know, this big community within your foundation.
Right.
So it is definitely a bigger picture and it's definitely, so definitely hits closer to home.
Yeah.
Than... You know, your money's going towards something and it's tangible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you guys so much for coming out and talking so openly and being so transparent. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like we said, it's just you don't really see that. So, golf tournament, run it by again. It's when? Where?
May 13th. No.
Yes. Yep.
May 13th.
Yeah.
I fuck up April, May that. All the time. April, May.
Monday, May 13th. Bass Rocks.
So, we already filled up the teams like that.
Wow. Awesome.
Know, crazy.
32 teams.
We got 32.
Oh, what?
I know.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Like, we should have done 2 flights. Because I'm going to feel bad, like, telling people, like, sorry.
wow.
But, like... whole sponsorships in any local companies, you know, that can and want to sponsor a hole. Like we really need that. Or even like Jackie was saying, gift certificate, anything, any little single thing,
right?
Like is so helpful,
right?
And we can't do this without the community,
right?
And we're in the goal is to only make the community a stronger place.
Right.
Like, you know, this is a Cape Ann thing. This is like a Gloucester thing.
Right.
You know, in the surrounding, like, neighborhoods and stuff. Like, and that's how this is going to work. Like, if we can rally around it, you know, it'll work.
Right.
It'll definitely work. We will get some people better. So, I don't have a doubt. Like,
right.
I'm pretty positive about this.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Yes, thank you very much for coming on.
And I'm sure we'll have you on again later down the road to hear about all your fundraising and cool. where, yes. you know, basically progress, right? Because
yeah.
this is the beginning, so it'd yeah, be so awesome right. to imagine track progress.
A year yeah. from now or whatever, 13, 14 months from now, we come in here with somebody who just celebrated a year.
Yeah,
that'd be amazing.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah,
that'd be great. And then you're just talking about your two golf tournaments yeah. and your softball
right.
tournament.
I know.
That
you have
going on.
Right.
Yeah.
right.
yeah, absolutely. We can right. definitely set that up. I'll keep watch. Don't worry.
be like, awesome. Hmm. So all your links, all your information, everything's going to be at the you know
yep.
going to, so everyone can just click on it and go to it.
Yeah.
I got that.
Yeah.
I got that all.
There we go.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. Well,
thank you. We'll get better at the technical stuff as we go along.
Yeah.
Oh, you will.
Jackie's doing she's doing a great job with it. But it's like,
you'll find all sorts of new stuff
yeah.
to play with and
new.
To figure out. You know.
Yeah, we all started somewhere.
We started
from the bottom.
Yeah.
now we're here.
Yeah. exactly. We're at 90.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This is
thank
episode
you.
90. Alicia Unleashed. Out.
Bye.
Bye.